You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM on the dial, www.ckut.ca on the internet. From the Washington Post, dated Monday, March 16, 2009. The International Committee of the Red Cross concluded in a secret report that the Bush administration's treatment of Al-Qaeda captives constituted torture, a finding that strongly implied that CIA interrogation methods violated international law, according to a newly published excerpt from the long-concealed 2007 document. The report, an account alleging physical and psychological brutality inside CIA black site prisons, also stated that some U.S. practices amount to, quote, cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment, end of quote. Such maltreatment of detainees is expressly prohibited by the Geneva Conventions.
The findings were based on an investigation by ICRC officials who were granted exclusive access to the CIA's high-value detainees. The 14 detainees who had been kept in isolation in CIA prisons overseas gave remarkably uniform accounts of abuse that included beatings, sleep deprivation, extreme temperatures, and in some cases, waterboarding or simulated drowning.
Many of the details of alleged mistreatment at CIA prisons had been reported previously, but the International Committee of the Red Cross report is the most authoritative account and the first to use the word torture in a legal context. The CIA declined to comment. Often using the detainees' own words, the report offers a harrowing view of conditions at the secret prisons, where prisoners were told they were being taken, quote, to the verge of death and back, end of quote.
Now, it is very important to note that the ICRC, the International Committee of the Red Cross, has discounted the possibility that the detainees have fabricated or embellished their stories because their accounts overlap in minute detail, even though these detainees were kept in severe isolation at different locations. Human rights groups have echoed this assessment.
We were reading from the article entitled Red Cross Described Torture at CIA Jail. Secret report implies that U.S. violated international law. This was published in the Washington Post Monday, March 16. Please stay with us. When we come back, an exclusive interview with attorney Jamil Jaffar, author of the highly acclaimed book Administration of Torture. On the line with us, Jamil Jaffar, lawyer and co-author of the highly acclaimed book Administration of Torture, a documentary record from Washington to Abu Ghraib and beyond. He will be sharing his insights with us. His perspectives are informed by his time as a human rights observer at the military commissions at Guantanamo Bay and through his lead role with the American Civil Liberties Union in the litigation of civil liberties and human rights cases relating to detention, torture, surveillance, censorship, and secrecy. Attorney Jamil Jaffar, welcome to our show, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'm sure you're aware of the report that has been published by the Washington Post on March 16, entitled Red Cross Described Torture at CIA Jails. We just read excerpts of the report on our program. Do you agree with what has been published?
Well, I think that what's been published by the Red Cross is consistent with what we already suspected about the CIA's interrogation program. And we did know already that the CIA, over the last 8 years, adopted interrogation methods that, in many contexts, amount to torture. And what this new Red Cross report helps us understand is how those interrogation methods were used, against whom they were used, what the consequences were. We have a lot more detail now than we did before that Red Cross report became public.
Jamil Jaffar, in this article by the Washington Post, it also mentions that this report has authority because for the first time it uses, quote, torture in a legal context. What does it mean?
Well, it's true that I think that this report does have a certain amount of credibility and authority by virtue of the fact that it comes from the Red Cross. These are interviews, so the Red Cross went to Guantanamo and interviewed prisoners who had previously been held by the CIA in secret prisons all over the world. And the Red Cross found that, first, that the prisoners were making really horrific allegations of torture at the hands of CIA personnel, but also that the allegations were consistent, so that even though the prisoners had not had a chance to talk to one another, their stories were similar. They were talking about the same kinds of interrogation methods, the same kinds of abuse. And I think that it's going to be increasingly difficult and I would say impossible for people who are associated with this program and people who were high up in the Bush administration to deny that what the CIA was engaged in was torture and that the torture was the result not of rogue interrogators, but rather of decisions that were made by the senior most officials in the Bush administration.
Well, in effect, this is what I would like you to share with our listeners, because you mentioned that the U.S. administration actually paved the way for torture. It was not just isolated cases like Secretary Rumsfeld at the time of Abu Ghraib said, when he said those were just a few bad apples, whereas your book and in your talks, you mentioned that this was a kind of pattern that escalated to reach those horrendous levels.
Yes, I mean, I think that's important to recognize that this wasn't a matter of isolated occurrences or aberrations, or again rogue interrogators. It was a decision that was made at the very top to authorize interrogation methods that had previously been considered off limits, and that in some cases the U.S. had at one time or another prosecuted as war crimes. For example, waterboarding, which is one of the interrogation methods that the CIA used. Waterboarding is something that was used against U.S. soldiers during the Second World War and during the Korean War. And after those wars, the United States prosecuted interrogators from other countries for waterboarding U.S. prisoners. So there's no question that some of these methods are illegal. They constitute war crimes under both U.S. law and international law. And I think increasingly the question is not going to be what did torture actually take place, but rather who should be held responsible for it and how.
Professor Jaffer, given what you've just told us about waterboarding, how it was used against the United States prisoners, and now it's the United States themselves that are using it, do you think that in the opinion of the United States administration, the definition of torture depends on who is enforcing the detention and who is the detainee?
I think that was absolutely true under the Bush administration. I think that in fact, during the presidential debates, Rudy Giuliani, who is one of the Republican contenders, he was never a spokesperson for the Republican Party, but he was a contender for the Republican ticket. He was asked that question. He was asked, "Do you think waterboarding is torture?" And his response was, "Well, it depends who's doing it." And he was half joking, but I think that is a fair characterization of the reasoning that went into this decision to authorize waterboarding. I find it hard to believe that people who were associated with the Bush administration, who were comfortable authorizing U.S. interrogators to waterboard prisoners in CIA custody, I find it hard to believe that those people would have been as lenient towards foreign interrogators who had waterboarded U.S. prisoners. It's impossible to believe.
Now, it was only a few weeks ago that President Obama stood up in front of the entire nation and said that he can unequivocally say that the United States does not torture. Do you think that it is possible that for Obama to make that statement, he simply changed the definition of what torture is, much in the same way that Bush changed the definition of what torture was to suit the needs of his administration?
Well, I think you're right to ask questions. I don't think it's enough for President Obama to say, we don't torture, because that is the same thing that President Bush said. What matters is not so much the words, but the actions. And I do think that the signs thus far are that President Obama does want to turn the page on some of these national security policies of the Bush administration, torture being one of them. But we'll have to see how it actually unfolds in practice, because it's very easy to manipulate the legal definition. That's what the Bush administration did in 2002 when it redefined the word torture. They did the same thing in 2005, redefining the phrase cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. So you can't accept any of these statements at face value. You have to look behind them. But again, that said, I think that President Obama has made some important steps in his first weeks in office. He did commit to closing down Guantanamo within a year. He committed to closing the CIA secret detention centers, and he committed to taking torture off the table. We'll have to police all of those commitments. We'll have to make sure that they're actually put into practice.
Jamal Jaffer, former Guantanamo inmates and other detainees that were in those black holes are intending to sue the U.S. government. Do you think this is realistic? Whom are they going to sue? Who is, perhaps Mr. Bush was the prime responsible for torture. How would this work in the legal system?
Well, it's not just a speculative prospect. These suits have actually been brought already. We represent a number of former prisoners, not Guantanamo prisoners, but people who were held in Iraq and Afghanistan, in a suit against, among other people, Donald Rumsfeld, who was the Secretary of Defense at the time our clients were tortured in U.S. custody. Now, these kinds of suits, and there are other suits out there. There's another suit on behalf of people who are former Guantanamo detainees. And these kinds of suits are very difficult because they raise novel legal questions about the extraterritorial application of the Constitution, immunity of senior officials, command responsibility. They're very complicated cases, and it'll take a long time for them to work their way through the courts. But I think that to me, and I think to the human rights community more generally, it's just not possible to believe that the courts will be closed altogether to the victims of torture. That if it's true that senior officials authorized or endorsed torture, the court should be open to claims against those officials. And you know, we'll have to see how these cases unfold. But they're serious cases, and some of them have already started to work their way through the courts.
Of course, they're not going to be simple cases. But if we look back to history, the Nazis' tortures have been pursued, and they were in court. There were courts judgments against them. Do you have a comment?
I think it's too early to say that people won't be held accountable for this. So one of the things that my organization, the ACLU, has been advocating is the appointment of a congressional committee to look into the responsibility for the abuse and torture of prisoners. And I think that there's still not just a possibility, but a likelihood that there will be an investigation, a more serious investigation, into the responsibility for those abuses. I also think that at this point there is so much evidence in the public domain that crimes were committed that it will become increasingly difficult for the current Justice Department not to initiate a criminal investigation. I don't think that there's any doubt anymore that crimes were committed. It's hard to read that Red Cross report, impossible to read that Red Cross report and come to the conclusion that people acted within the constraints of the law. And so I think that what you're going to see is increasing pressure on the Justice Department to initiate a criminal investigation, to appoint a special prosecutor who's independent of the Justice Department, to look into criminal responsibility for the torture.
Professor Jaffer, clearly well spoken, clearly well expressed, with a Muslim name. Have you found that you yourself have encountered prejudice because of having a Muslim name? Have you found that your struggle for the advocacy of human rights has been harder because you have a Muslim name?
You know, I think I've been very lucky. I don't think that, I certainly haven't been the victim of the kind of discrimination that any of my clients have been the victim of, and some of them have really horrific stories. Most of them have really horrific stories. Some stories involve things like torture, but others involve things like detention and discrimination. We represent some people who were kicked off flight because pilots or airline attendants thought that they looked suspicious. You know, we have all kinds of cases like that. I have never personally experienced that kind of discrimination, and I'm grateful for it.
Thank you very much, Jamil Jaffer.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for having me on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please stay with us. This is Caravan.
You can listen to Caravan every Wednesday live on the internet, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, www.ckut.ca.